Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with Mattia Kramer, a senior research analyst at the National Priorities Project, a non-profit, non-partisan research organization dedicated to making complex federal budget information transparent and accessible. We will discuss the lack of transparency behind the recent much-heralded fiscal cliff deal, the contents of which are only now coming to light. Then we'll discuss how the big lie lost with William Grider, the national affairs correspondent with The Nation, where he has an article, "The Big Lie Loses." With the phony fiscal cliff drama now over, before the next one begins over the debt ceiling, we will examine whether the Wall Street titans responsible for our collapsed economy will be able to continue punishing the wrong people for the nation's economic ills by demonizing popular federal programs like Social Security, which they blame for the deficits, instead of their own reckless greed. Then finally, best-selling author Jared Diamond joins us to discuss his latest book, The World Until Yesterday, What Can We Learn from Traditional Societies? The author of Collapse and Guns, Germs and Steel, and a professor of geography at UCLA, he spent decades with tribes in the remote New Guinea highlands, and he brings the wisdom of the natural world back to our troubled, civilized lives, beset by obesity from corporate food, paranoia from mindless media, and planetary destruction from compulsive consumption. And joining us now is Mattia Kramer, who's a senior research analyst at the National Priorities Project, a national nonprofit, nonpartisan research organization dedicated to making complex federal budget information transparent and accessible. They recently released a book, A People's Guide to the Federal Budget. Welcome to Background Briefing, Mattia Kramer.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So, Mattia, the idea that you're trying to make the federal budget transparent and accessible, this deal that was just struck, nobody knew the details of it until after it was done. There was no transparency, and everybody's sort of celebrating this kind of, you know, avoiding something worse. But I think people are not focusing on that, you know, whatever the deal is, this is no way to run a railroad.
That's right. We're so distracted by the fact that there was this looming crisis that we haven't had a moment to stop and say, our democratic process broke down. This is not how our government ought to be run. We saw elected officials, just the very top leadership, craft a deal that will affect this country for years to come, with little or no input, certainly from the American people, but hardly from most of our representatives in Congress.
And then we find out that there's a bunch of pork in there as well that somehow got slipped in for NASCAR, for film and television production. So how did that happen?
Well, those kinds of add-ons are often part of legislation, and they're more and more coming to light, which, you know, I think is a good thing. You know, what's funny about those kinds of earmarks, they're often called, is that those have often been used to grease the wheels of the democratic process. So we have a political system in this country that makes it difficult to accomplish things. You know, we have a system in which we have all these representatives all acting with different motives and self-interest, and those earmarks can sometimes grease the wheels and help craft a deal. And so it's absolutely important that light be shone on them, and in many cases they represent hardly the interests of the people at large, but they have in many cases served a purpose.
So what about this deal strikes you as you're concerned mostly about the process, right? That it wasn't transparent. And now, of course, it's your job to make sense of it. So what can you do to help us on both?
Sure. Well, one surprising and important thing that came out of the deal was the extension of unemployment benefits. So federal emergency unemployment benefits were scheduled to expire at the end of 2012. About 2 million Americans would have lost benefits, and then folks who would have been eligible for that program in 2013 would not have been because of the expiration of these emergency benefits. And so that by no means was guaranteed if a deal did come to pass. And so the passage of that extension is a very good thing for some of our most vulnerable citizens.
Well, but the payroll tax holiday is over, right? Everybody's going to feel the pinch in their checks, their monthly or biweekly paychecks.
That's right. And that's not as much of a surprise. So lawmakers in general had not pushed for the extension of the payroll tax holiday. I think some Democratic lawmakers wanted to see that tax holiday extended, and they had long seen that it wasn't likely to be included, and they'd sort of given up that fight. And so, indeed, this tax holiday expires. What it means is the rate at which workers pay into the Social Security program will return to 6.2% of wages. It was temporarily reduced to 4.2%, but that was just for 2 years. That was passed back in 2010. And now it will return to its normal rate of 6.2%. And that's actually, from the perspective of the Social Security program, that's a good thing. It's certainly not a good thing from the perspective of Americans having money in their pockets, and it will, as you're saying, it will have a negative effect on the economy.
Again, I'm speaking with Mattia Kramer, who's a senior research analyst at the National Priorities Project, a national nonprofit, nonpartisan research organization dedicated to making complex federal budget information transparent and accessible. They recently released a book, A People's Guide to the Federal Budget. Now, another thing that was slipped in, well, I don't know whether these things are slipped in at the dead of night and how they get in and why it is we never hear about them until it's a fait accompli, but for example, the fact that the White House and the Democrats appeared to cave on tax on dividends and on carried interest. We know from the last election that Mitt Romney and people like him make their money off dividends and they only pay 15% tax if they pay any tax at all because they can carry the interest indefinitely, it seems. There was an expectation that what was on the table was, had they not made a deal, it would have gone back to 39.6% tax, and instead they settled for 20% tax above 15, which is not really a great deal of pain. My sense is if that had that been out in the open, enough Americans would have weighed in and said, no, you know, we've had enough of these people getting a free ride, the richest in this country. This whole idea that we're taxing the rich again or they're going back to the Clinton rates misses the point. Most of the rich make their money this way through capital gains.
Well, and Ian, another point about that is that that rate rises to 20% only for income above that $400,000 or $450,000 threshold, right? It's $400,000 for individuals, $450,000 for couples. So the rate only rises for income above that very high threshold. And you know, keep in mind, average Americans are earning, you know, $50,000 a year or so forth. So this is an extremely high threshold, roughly corresponding with the wealthiest 1% of Americans.
So no way in the world that we can consider this a victory for tax fairness. And it's not doing a lot for the Treasury in terms of revenues.
Well, so it will raise some new revenues. It's certainly not what Democrats had hoped for, and it's important to keep in mind in this discussion, federal tax revenue as a share of the U.S. economy right now is at its lowest point in about 60 years. So, you know, because of tax cuts, tax loopholes, we are paying less in taxes, even if it doesn't feel like that. And so this deal included some new revenues. That's an important stride. But as you're saying, of course, it's hardly problem solved.
So the ghost of George W. Bush still haunts Washington. I mean, he ran up these vast deficits and ended up at the end of his second term, the economy crashed. And a lot of people on the right think it's a good thing that the government shrinks and essentially becomes powerless and penniless. But at the end of the day, this deal has really not undone what Bush did in terms of tax cuts. It's done it for people under households earning under $450,000. But, I mean, they've retained their tax breaks, but the people above haven't. So it's still perpetuating this kind of dogma against taxes, which come down to the heart of how a government functions. And the really adult conversation this country surely needs, based upon what you just told us, that we're paying record low taxes for the last 60 years, if these people are going to complain about this deficit, as they do all the time, and the Pete Petersons of this world keep beating this drum, then how the hell can, why are we listening to them? I mean, everybody's got to say, okay, if this is as serious as you say it is, then we all have to pitch in.
Yeah, the point about why are we all focused on this notion of deficits, you know, that has a lot to do with how much attention it's gotten in the media. You know, many folks would say that the top priority should be economic recovery and then deficit reduction in the long term. But deficit reduction and the magnitude of the federal debt have gotten so much attention in the media that we're all sort of trained to think at this point that deficit reduction ought to happen. Now, as a corollary of that, we've also been hearing that it should happen solely through spending cuts. But when we hear this fact that federal tax revenue is at a historic low right now, that certainly brings into light that we ought to be looking at both sides of the budget, right? The federal budget is two things, it's spending and it's revenue.
Well, the Republicans are now saying, now we're going to start focusing on spending. And, you know, a lot of Democrats are celebrating, and so is the White House, that they managed to basically get, you know, the tax side of it done, but not the revenue side of it done. And, you know, they came out unscathed in terms of not cutting any programs. And now the Republicans are sharpening their knives and saying, now it's time to start cutting programs. And but this is, again, is a phony debate, because nobody's talking about the biggest items that are driving the deficit, and that is out-of-control healthcare costs and out-of-control military spending. Both of those seem to be pretty much off the table. So all you've got left is discretionary spending, and they're going to pare that down to the Eisenhower era. So, you know, we'll basically have a government that's a war machine and a pension plan.
Well, and non-military discretionary spending is such a small share of the total budget that even if you eliminated it completely, it would scarcely solve our budget problems, and then you'd have, you know, no programs in education, no programs in roads and infrastructure. So that's, of course, a preposterous notion. So lawmakers will have to look to controlling health care costs, as you're saying, and likely defense costs as well.
Well, you're saying they'll have to, but will they?
Well, we're expecting a debate over what's being called entitlement reform in the coming year, and some proposals were put forth during the fiscal cliff negotiations. Raising the Medicare eligibility age was one of them. We're likely to see these proposals and others surface in 2013, and so there will be discussion about reducing healthcare spending. The question is, will it be benefit cuts, or will it be fundamental change in the way that we pay for healthcare in order to preserve benefits for entitled Americans, you know, folks who are retired and rely on these programs, and will we do so by driving down the cost of health care rather than simply cutting benefits?
Well, I thank you for joining us, Mattia Kramer, and for making complex federal budget information transparent and accessible. I'd say in closing, you've got your work cut out.
Indeed we do. I hope folks will visit our website. It's nationalpriorities.org. There's a lot more information there, and a book out called A People's Guide to the Federal Budget, and I hope folks will check it out.
Well, I thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Mattia Kramer, who's a senior research analyst at the National Priorities Project, a national nonprofit, nonpartisan research organization dedicated to making complex federal budget information transparent and accessible. And as she just said, they recently released a book, A People's Guide to the Federal Budget. We're going to take a brief station break, and we're back talking with Bill Greider about how the big lie lost.
You break down. I never.